17. Hayden. It took almost 2 hours for Hayden to get everything organized. There was a lot to do, starting with removing the bodies of Cortez and Nan from the warehouse. It was a somber affair, one he always oversaw personally whenever he could. He hated losing people. Even after 2 years and hundreds of casualties, he still felt it when someone died. He still took it personally. It was his failure that had led to their deaths. Whether it was in the planning or execution, he always believed there was something he could have done differently or better. He should have sounded the retreat as soon as the first trife appeared. His assumption that it was a scout group had cost his deputies their lives. Some people wallowed in the blame. Hayden wasn't one of them. Self-pity didn't work. It might soothe his guilt, but it would also leave him a weak mess, and the world already had enough of those. Too many people counted on him to be strong, to stand up for justice and keep the peace. The best way to honor the lives that were lost was to do the best job he could do. Every single day. Without fail, without complaint, without hesitation. He helped carry Cortez out on a stretcher, holding up the front end while Salino and Kevitz took the rear. Hayden wasn't a muscled behemoth, but his augments did offer him more strength and stamina than an average human possessed. But he did feel the strain in his legs, especially in his knees, and he felt it in his right arm where the augment's control ring connected to the organic tissue, muscles, and nerves. His career was a dangerous one and had led him to replace that arm multiple times. Too many times. The entire system was damaged, leaving him in near constant pain. He lived with it, again without complaint. It was a reminder of his mission, and what he had lost. They brought Cortez to a helicopter. A Bell Iroquois his wife Natalia and her team of mechanics and engineers had brought back to life with the help of a network of scavengers. The chopper was rusty and dirty, but it was functional and valuable, carrying personnel and supplies across the United Western Territories, connecting the cities of Cenisco, Sonosa, Tijuana, La Vega, Haven, and Digo. Except the last three weren't really cities anymore. A run-in with the hunger had cost him almost half the population of the UWT and left those areas in ruin. They would rebuild in time, but for now the survivors had been coming north to Cenisco, the capital, huddling up for safety in the wake of the destruction. That was only part of the fallout. The reduced control of the cities had brought the rats out of hiding with the belief there was an opening to seize back some of what Hayden had taken. Would-be warlords and gangs had moved into the abandoned areas, along with scavengers, thieves, and traffickers, all looking for whatever scraps they could find. The warehouse had been home to one of those gangs. The intervention here intended to be a signal to the others that law still existed in the UWT, and nobody could ignore it without bringing the sheriff down on them. Maybe the message was still intact, but at what cost? Two deputies, killed by trife that didn't belong.
"I'll make sure you didn't die for nothing," Hayden said as he helped place the stretcher inside the helicopter.
The pilot, Bronson, strapped it in.
"Sorry about Cortez and Nan, Sheriff," he said. "They were good people."
"Paz," Hayden agreed.
"Bring them home and then circle back."
"Roger," Bronson replied.
"Try not to die in the meantime.
You know me."
Bronson nodded and moved to the cockpit of the chopper. Hayden, Salino, and Kevitz backed away, joining the deputies the pilot had delivered earlier. The Rangers were Hayden's most skilled team of deputies, special forces who had gone through Centurion Space Force, training with Rico and with Bennett before her. Except most of Bennett's trainees were gone now, too. More fallout from his fight against the hunger. The Rangers standing in front of him were a mostly new group and weren't as experienced as he would have liked. Hicks was the squad leader and the longest tenured deputy on Hayden's staff. The man was his former chief deputy who had begged to be part of the Rangers to help get them back into fighting shape following their losses. While there had been a time when Hayden and Hicks were enemies, but that time was long past.
"Rangers," Hayden said, acknowledging them.
They snapped to attention, arms down at their sides.
"Sheriff Duke, sir."
"Chief Ranger Hicks, are we ready to go?"
Hayden asked. The helicopter's engines raised in pitch behind him as Bronson prepared for takeoff.
Yes, Sheriff, Hicks replied. Ready and eager. Then let's do this. Salino, Kevitz, you have the door.
Roger, Sheriff, the two deputies replied.
Hayden knew they both wanted to go back into the warehouse to make amends for the deaths of Cortez and Nan. But the Rangers were better trained and better armed, and they needed someone outside the building keeping watch for both returning Trife scouts and possible human intervention.
Salino, Hayden said. Helmet, please.
He handed Salino his hat and glasses, accepting a helmet in return. He pulled it over his head, the base clicking when it latched to the connector in the combat armor. A HUD popped up in his visor, and then the armor indicated it was networked with the rest of the Rangers. Five designations appeared across the top of the visor, each outlined in green to show they were healthy.
This is Sheriff Duke, Comcheck. Ranger 1 online, Hicks said.
Ranger 2 online, a woman's voice announced.
Hayden glanced at her designation on the HUD. Her surname was Jackson.
Ranger 3 online,
another man said. Bach.
Ranger 4 online,
a third man announced. Rollins.
Ranger 5 online,
a second woman said. Ivanov.
All units online, Hicks said. We're ready to roll, Sheriff.
Pause that,
Hayden replied, leading the group back into the warehouse. He grabbed his plasma rifle from his back and turned it on, keeping it level in front of him. With the Queen dead, the Trife would be less inclined to fight until they were threatened. He had every intention of threatening them. He crossed the warehouse to the corner, the night vision in the helmet keeping the quality of his vision stable, even as the amount of light decreased. He came to a stop in front of the hole the Trife had climbed from. Their claw marks were easily visible in the rock beneath the building's floor, which had cracked, crumbled, and collapsed into an underground excavation. There was no obvious sign of Trife below, either visually or on the advanced tactical combat system sensors, meaning the hole continued beyond the immediate area.
Do Trife dig tunnels?
Hicks asked, coming up beside Hayden and looking into the hole.
Not that I've ever heard of or seen, Hayden replied. But they evolve quickly. Do you think it's a response to the Goliaths?
Hayden glanced at the Ranger Chief. The Goliaths were the only reason the UWT was able to remain as Trife-free as it did.
We can't rule it out.
He looked back at the hole. If the Trife were tunneling below the surface to get around the Goliaths, the people of the UWT might be in for a new deadly threat before they recovered from the last one. But not if he could help it.